What's good, everyone? It's Marcus or Pink.
What's good, everyone? You got Matt or Haz. Bring it in today. No Gavin, no Charles. We're going to duo this episode. It's going to be a fun time. If you want, though, we did record some content earlier in the week with Tweak. It's going to be on our Patreon, new price of $50 a month. So if you guys want that, sign up, hit it real quick, patreon.com/tweaktalks.
April Fools. What up, guys? It's Gavin and Tweak. No paywalling me today. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Bro said today.
Maybe next week. Yeah, it's been a while. What's up, everyone? Have a couple things to talk about. I actually watched Battle of BC on my long travel home. And I watched some of it live after the tournament I was at. But yeah, how's everyone doing?
True. That's a good question. It's been a minute. There's no Chuck, so we can't hit like a true like life update, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm great. You know, same thing. Nothing's really changing. Except like the house be falling apart, but not like really. But you know, when you get a new house, like things just automatically go wrong for some reason. You gotta start spending some money. So that sucks, but I mean everything else is great. Life's been good.
How about maybe we you, should man? Pay well. Maybe we should pay well, Gavin.
Your you house know what? Is falling apart. True. Why don't you put it that way? I mean, hey, Gavin, my house repairs. You got me or what? Like,
I'll try my best. Maybe 50 wasn't enough.
Oh no, not even close.
Hey, bro, things have been good. I know. I was thinking the same thing when we were kind of booting up and getting ready. It's been a second since we've done like an episode. Like, definitely the most inconsistent we've been in a little bit. So I felt bad about that, but also it's good to take a break and to chill and do other stuff. So it's baseball season, so I'm watching a lot of baseball. I'm back in there on my baseball grind, which is great. I went and I visited my dad who retired to Florida right around the time COVID started. So I went down and visited him and I was on a real vacation, which was great. And I was on that vacation diet, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Margs and good food pretty much every single day. Really good food. I had an amazing time, but now I'm back and it's like, I really have been hitting the gym like super hard and dieting super hard again. Like I'm back on my grind. I don't remember. I think my next event is MomoCon. So I have like a due date basically to hit a good weight and like feel good about myself and stuff again. Not that I like, you know, I took a vacation, you know what I'm saying? But now I'm back in it and I'm really feeling it, which is great. I'm doing 2-a-days and all that good stuff. So happy to be working out again. Happy to be watching Smash again. Like I had a great time watching Battle of BC in your tournament as well, Gavin. So how was your vacation, bro? Hit us with it.
It was good. It was B and I's second trip to Hawaii. It was our anniversary very shortly before we left. Which is funny because when we figured we were going to Hawaii, when we were planning everything out, we mentally thought our anniversary landed on the week, like somewhere in there. And it was like actually a day or two before we left. So we both forgot our anniversary, like the day, because we like mentally checked that it was like during the vacation and it wasn't. But yeah, we did a bunch of stuff. It was kind of like a coincidental celebration week. Charles is always a great host. We did some new hikes, some new beaches, lots of good food. My favorite thing about it was that it was familiar enough because we've done it before, but we were still doing some newish stuff. Like I really like that combination of comfort and doing new stuff. So that was really cool. Even the hotel we stayed at was the same one as the year before. Like there's like a really big outdoor mall. I think it might be the biggest in the world or America or something. And there's always something new to do. Like checking out the convention was cool. We had a good time. Just every day it felt like we were doing something, and I did so much hiking and stuff, bro. Like I was checking my Pokemon Go. That's like some of the most I've ever walked in a week. Like at least on checking on Pokemon Go, bro. So yeah, it was a good time.
it's a good time of year for us to go to, like, the Northeasterners, because it's still, like, bro, I was so happy being in Florida and just being in the sun every day and just moving around. Like, it just felt so good, bro. I'm like, what I do, because it's so cold around here, obviously, in the winter and stuff, I love going for, like, walks and jogs outside and runs outside. I'm not doing that in the middle of winter or even in the beginning of spring and stuff. It's too cold. It's too rainy and shitty. Yeah. So I have, like, the walking pad. I've showed it to you before, Gavin, for sure. I just... It's great and I love it, but bro, I feel like a hamster sometimes, you know, I'm just spinning my wheel, you know, like, come on, I gotta get me outside. I'm feeling crazy, but yeah, dude, I'm glad.
That was kind of what we were hoping for. Cause when we left for Hawaii, it was still like not quite spring yet. And the plan was by the time we're back, it would be fully into spring. So we like kind of cheated the system a little bit, like go vacation for a week. And by the time we come back, we don't have to deal with like a terrible weather. But it looks like it's not quite good yet. It's been rainy and everything. Maybe I think next week it might start getting nice and everything. But yeah, so we didn't cheat the system as much as we were hoping for. But yeah.
You got good weather coming up, playoff basketball. Everything's coming together, bro.
Embiid came back last night from where we're recording this. Last night, Embiid came back. The Sixers won. I've just been sick of being the butt of the joke, bro. Butt of the joke. All these Celtics fans, all these Knicks fans, they're doing so well and thriving. Like, no, bro. It's time for this shit to be over, especially the Knicks. Like, the Sixers, like, because we're not going to stop Boston or anything. Like, they're already in the playoffs and everything. But, you know, maybe it's finally time. Like, it's from January to now, it's been nothing but torture. But maybe we have a chance, bro. Maybe we have a chance.
Yeah, we caught a Sixers game when I came out to visit, and that was a rough one, is the way I'll put it. It's not great, if you know what I'm saying.
It's not great without Embiid, bro.
Yeah. It's tough to lose the MVP, I guess. But either way, like you said, a pair of tournaments this weekend that were really good. I think the best way to start is to dive in and talk about your tournament, Gavin, KawhiCon, which you've gone to. Now you're reigning champ 2 years in a row. You win tournaments in New York City and in Hawaii. Like, that's your thing, I guess. Back to back, two interesting spots. Tell us about the con a little bit. I know Larry was there. I know Void was there. Termy, of course. The competition was stepped up a little bit, I'd say, this year, just overall in the bracket, because you had Mars and Gluto last year for the top heavy, and you, obviously, for the heavy hitters. And then this year, it was kind of more spread out, where it was Gacked, Larry, Void, a couple of good
I'm
players. Tama P, yep.
Yeah, it was varied. Both years were varied in terms of like the handful of top players. But yeah, I was thinking about the year before. The year before, despite it being so top heavy, I still pretty much played the best players there in terms of like the players that weren't from Hawaii last year. Like, I played Gluto, Mars, and Boyd. I don't know if I'm forgetting someone. I think those were the main people in attendance last year for like visiting top players. And because Mars took a set off of Gluto and Winners, I got to play everyone pretty much rather than some sort of combination and like leaving someone out. So I played Gluto, Mars, and Void. And that's what that was my favorite part about that bracket and being able to win, was that like I got a piece of everything. And this year was actually pretty similar. I managed to play everyone except Void. I did play him last year, but yeah, I wanted to win with Sephiroth. I was just being silly, I guess. I just really want to make Sephiroth work. I took a long break from Sephiroth as well. So I was trying to just focus on him. And it was going okay, but it's just so much harder for me compared to Diddy Kong in tournament to like make it work. So I lost to Larry 3-2 in winners. I played Big Stu, which I think is Hawaii's best player currently. He plays Kazuya. Had to play Diddy for that one as well because the Sephiroth wasn't working out. So yeah, it's tough, dude. Sephiroth is so hard. Like, it always feels like maybe I figured something out and then I just get destroyed and I'm back to square one. Like, it's always like that with him. It's so hard to like have something tangible on the screen to work with. But yeah, after I lost to Larry, I started playing Diddy Kong, and the cool thing about that was I got to play pretty much everyone because I got sent into losers. I played Tama P. I played Larry again. I played Gackt in two sets. So I got more sets in than I would have if I didn't lose. So I thought that was cool, especially because I hadn't been playing the game too much. So I beat Tama P 3-1. I beat Larry 3-0. I beat Gackt 3-0 in both sets. And yeah, I just, my Diddy's so much better. I would love it for my Sephiroth to magically be there, but I think the tournament experience and the hours speak for themselves a lot of the time. And that's why I was going Sephiroth in sets where I would have a better chance winning with Diddy. Because I said this in the interview after. I truly believe, like, putting your characters you want to improve in, like, tough spots and putting pressure on them can really accelerate growth, even if it's, like, quote-unquote the wrong decision for, like, winning in that very moment. I always try to be, like, a long-term person, so I was willing to take that risk. And I also have so much confidence in myself that a lot of the time, if I'm hindering myself, I still expect to win, as egotistical as that is. A lot of the time, I expect to win short-term and long-term all at the same time. But I still had backup plans for, like, things not working out. You know, just sticking to Diddy Kong and playing a little differently, all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, loser's bracket went smooth. I kind of sat down to play my sets. And, like, you know, once you're in that, like, top four of the bracket, you're basically sitting there the rest of the event if you're winning. So I just played a few sets and it was over. And I was like, oh, like, I didn't even have time to realize it was over. I was like, okay, let's go eat food, I guess, because it ended relatively early. So I got to watch some Battle of BC matches, some Toriguri, some Hurt Snake, some Spargo, Riddles, Dormigi. So, yeah, I mean, it went smooth, but in, like, a way that I don't think I would have expected initially because I was playing so much Sephiroth.
There's two things that I think I wanted to ask you about the event, because I think there could be a few takeaways from it. One is, do you feel as though it helped improve your confidence in your Diddy Kong at all? Because you were kind of struggling with Sephiroth quite a bit, and then, like, obviously you lost, but the moment you pulled out Diddy Kong, they were struggling to take stocks. So do you feel like that even, like, helped you maybe feel like, oh, snap, my Diddy Kong is really like that?
It was hard to think of the takeaways because, like I said, I sat down, played a few sets, and it was just over. Like, it was happening so, like, in a flow that, like, I didn't have time to think. But I know what you mean. Honestly, no. I don't know if it's a bit arrogant, but, like, I think highly of my Diddy Kong and, like, playing to win and all that. Like, I kind of expected to win with Sephiroth, so of course I'm gonna expect to win with Diddy. But yeah, I don't know, it's so hard to say, because something that's difficult about Smash and Diddy Kong and all that is, like, I feel like in order to win, you have to be super dynamic. You can't, like, stick to one flow chart. You have to be super creative and, like, try to make sure you're not rigid in your decision making. And I think because everything was working, it's way easier for me, and I can just be dynamic, be creative. And, like, if everything is working, man, like, it makes it a lot easier to not overthink or second guess. So I don't know. I really don't know. But yeah, I think that Diddy was playing pretty well. I was actually having some issues with the adapter on stream. And once I switched it out, I don't know if it was placebo or if the adapter was actually messing up, like, the miss inputs that were happening before just did not happen again. So it just went really well from there. The miss input was weird. Like, so when I was playing on stream, I would pull banana and I would Z catch it. So just press Z to catch it. That's it. And I would do that and it would catch it, but Diddy would immediately throw it as soon as I caught it. So I was like, that's weird. Maybe I held it too long and I moved my control stick, because you can throw the item with the Z button as well, with grab. So I was like, that's weird. But then it was happening most of the time, if not every time. And I was like, okay, this is my controller. My controller is not working. I unplugged, kept happening. And I was like, my controller is broken. I was naturally like, you know, figuring it out. And I was like, okay, my Z button is sticking. Like, that's the conclusion I came to. I was like, my Z button is sticking because if it's throwing it, that means it's holding the Z button longer than when I'm pressing it. Like, then I think I'm pressing it. Like, I was like, okay, that makes sense. So I was telling like B and stuff, and she's like, oh, go try it on another setup. And I did, and I didn't miss input once. And I was like, okay, it's the adapter. So I'm just going back and forth with everything. So I was like, I like talked to the TO. I was like, all right, next time I play, can we like do a quick adapter switch? Like, sorry, blah, blah, blah. And then I was fine. So it wasn't like best case scenario was that it wasn't like my controller. Like, my controller wasn't permanently messing up. So the rest of the bracket was smooth from there, basically.
Was Dark Musician the TO? That dude's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Is this the TO out there?
He was more so running the stream.
Mm.
It was the same kind of squad as last year. I'm forgetting his name, but he was really nice guy both years. He was TOing, and I talked with him. We switched out the adapters. But I think some other people might have been having input delay or something. So I'm glad we figured it out.
I'm glad you said something, too. It's one of those things where it's like, especially the way you were thinking about it, which I appreciate, is you checked all your stuff first, right? Which is the way to do it. Like, first, am I just fucking up as a player? Like, come on, you know, like, it could happen. And it's like, no, I know. All right, let's check it on a controller. Okay, before you, that's where you got to do it. The scientific method, you got to test everything out, but definitely check yourself first before you're like,
better late than never. Like, obviously, like, the second there was any suspicion, it would have been nice to fix, but there's so many things that go into it that it's hard to like fix it immediately. But yeah, I played much better after that, especially because I was using Sephiroth most of the time, and a lot, like, there's not really much to miss input other than like input delay with Sephiroth. Like, I'm not catching items, or like, I'm mostly just like running away and swinging my sword. So like, I don't think
I know what you're gonna say. You mostly do with Sephiroth because
that's a lot of nothing.
You're running away.
Please don't hurt me. So, like, I don't think I would have noticed if I didn't start playing more Diddy. So,
okay. And my next question. So, I know that you weren't feeling too hot about the game recently and competing. You kind of mentioned this in your interview afterward, that it was, like, a nice little break and, like, kind of a reset. Do you think that the tournament and just going to Hawaii kind of like had a little bit of reinvigoration, or you're just still in the same spot? Like,
That was what I was hoping for. But yeah, the scary thing is I don't feel any better about the game currently. And that's the weird thing. Like, cause when something goes really well, like when you win and like, you're not losing many games in the bracket or whatever, like that I think the weird feeling, I didn't have time to process anything, but yeah, I don't really, like, I didn't feel like I learned something magical. I didn't feel like I figured players out or myself out, or I didn't do anything particularly new with Diddy. Not that I'm necessarily searching for that, but yeah, I didn't really get anything to help me get out of like the slump with the game, which is, I'm trying to frame it. Like, maybe it's not necessary. Maybe life and competition is just playing itself out. Like, there's always cycles with this stuff. Like, it's just how it is. There's ups and downs. So I'm trying to see it like that and just like going with the motions and just like not overthinking it and trying to be patient. But yeah, right now, like, the game is pretty brutal. Like, there's just so much stuff I'm not a fan of, but I'm still like, you know, when I plug in, I'm still going to play my best. But my biggest takeaway was slightly before I left. Like, I was doing a lot of Wi-Fi. I did a couple coin boxes. You know, there were some struggles on there. And I was I always go back to the thing where I should just play the characters everyone else are playing. Like, I should play, like, Cloud because, like, why wouldn't I? Blah, blah, blah. Just, like, thinking very on paper. But, like, you know, one night, like, I wasn't playing. I was kind of just watching a bracket or something. Like, I was watching a little bit of Smash. And, like, I just thought to myself, like, I need to stop letting that cycle happen. I need to play the characters I want to play, and I need to like just like understand like the rough stuff that comes with that. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. Like, I like Diddy and Sephiroth. Like, especially Sephiroth. Like, I know there's a lot of troubles with the character or whatever, but like, if Smash Ultimate Deluxe or Smash 6 comes out and I'm like moving on to something new, like I'm going to regret not making the most of those characters when that day comes. So like I'm just, you know, that's why I'm trying to figure out Sephiroth, like playing him in brackets, seeing if something clicks, because I'm trying to accelerate the growth so we can catch up to Diddy, because I've never really given up on Diddy Kong, you know what I mean? And I feel like that's why he's so reliable. I can go to loser's bracket, win a tournament, or I can win a hard matchup, and it's because I put in the extra effort. And I need to, regardless if it works out with Sephiroth or not, it's not going to work out if I don't put in the extra effort. So basically that's the biggest takeaway the last like month or so, is that, you know, Collision was rough and I lost to Steve, but I lost to Onin and DD, like just 3-0, like just what, like just got smoked at Collision. And like, I used some Sephiroth in those sets, and like, I can't just ditch the game plan like that soon, because I also haven't been putting in the extra effort. So I just got to take the L and like have faith that like the combination of Diddy and Sephiroth will work in the future for those matchups. But yeah, that was my biggest takeaway. It's mostly just about my character selection, and hopefully I don't go through that silly cycle again. Like I'm sick of it. For Cloud specifically, I don't have as many regrets about not playing him in Ultimate, because I had so much time with him in 4 that I feel like it should be Sephiroth's turn in my head. Like Sephiroth wasn't in the last game, so naturally I should put more of a focus on him, regardless of like tiers or anything. Because it's actually funny that this, I'm kind of rambling right now, but I guess I wasn't here last week. Maybe I'm due for it. So there's a bit of a secret with like me and B, where if I like won a big tournament with primarily Sephiroth, I was actually gonna get a tattoo. Surprise.
I didn't know this. What the fuck?
Yeah, so it was gonna be like on my like forearm or something like there. Like I don't know which arm, but
Masamune?
It was gonna be the Buster Sword and the Masamune like next to each other, and maybe some extra details from there. So like I care a lot about Cloud. I consider Cloud and Smash 4 to be the reason why I'm like sitting here right now, like having a career in Smash and all that stuff, because it really, that character really elevated me a lot.
it was a bit of a character jump, yeah.
Like overnight. And I loved playing him, and you know, FF7's one of my favorite games, all that stuff. Like the process was very special, and Sephiroth is a character I really wanted in the game, and it's been amazing playing him, and he's so fun and very difficult, and like always keeping me on my toes and thinking. And you know, I can say that for Diddy too, but for Cloud and Sephiroth, like basically there's my whole thing with those two. Like, so like I'm not going to be upset if I don't play him in Ultimate, because I put in so much time with him in 4, and I'm not trying to bring back something that already happened. Like it's kind of something I'd rather let go than like try to recreate in a different game, because it just doesn't even make sense. You know, that time came and went. So, but yeah, those, Cloud is very special to me, but in a different way than Sephiroth and Diddy, since I'm actively playing them in Ultimate.
And I think too, like the thing with Sephiroth, like two things, and I think we've said it before on this podcast, and one is like you have to like the character you're playing, because the more you like the character, the more you play the game, the more you think about it, the more driven you are to win. And I think we've seen that in Ultimate more than any Smash game before.
Yeah,
I think it works in Melee too, like, but more for a play style thing, because there's like 7 or 8 characters in that game, whatever. But in Ultimate specifically, more people are winning with what they would consider like a favorite character for different reasons than they're my favorite character because they're number one in the game, right? Like that's way less common than it has been before. And I think just having that natural interest in wanting to win and having an X factor reason why you want to win is a big deal, especially for someone like you who can play pretty much any character in the cast and see really good results with them. Then the other thing is I think, I don't know, I like the story between the Cloud and the Sephiroth too. I think that's interesting, and they're two different sides. Plus, bro, you like Sephiroth better than Cloud anyway, though. I think just as a character, knowing you,
yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, come on, that's why. Come on, yeah. Now.
I mean, he was like the character I really thought if he was in the game, like that I would like never have a negative thought on Ultimate again. Obviously, that that's like very silly assumption. I really thought like as long as it's Sephiroth, like I'll be happy. And there's some truth to that and some not truth to that. So
April Fool's, Ma. Yeah. And the other thing is he does genuinely cover a couple of matchups that make City basically non-soloable, like Ice Climbers, like Steve, right? Yeah. Like those, I think of those two mostly.
Yeah, there's a there's some characters he genuinely helps with, but it's probably not even double digits, sadly. So like making it work is difficult, but like it's not even like I play Sephiroth with intention of covering Diddy Kong. You pick the characters you like and you figure out the coverage afterwards for a lot of people. So like whatever. But yeah, and I the other thing is I've been doing this so long that it makes it a little easier for me to justify playing something like Diddy and Sephiroth rather than like Steve or Sonic or whatever. Cause like when I was younger, I was just straight up playing the best characters. And it was a slight coincidence. Like I knew Cloud was good, but I didn't realize that it would lead to where we are now. And DK was just a fun character that got buffed and it just stuck with me. And then Bale was like, that was intentional. You know what I mean? Like I didn't care about the games or anything like that at the time. Like the games are cool, but they're still not like in my favorites or anything, but the character was really fun, really good. Spent a lot of time on it and I was playing to win. And I would be willing to do that, but like, it has to be a bit of everything. The stars have to align at least slightly. Like Steve isn't fun for me. It's a whole different universe. Like, I don't like, I'm good. Like I'm good on that. Like I don't like Sonic or anything. Like, so like,
let's I've been get doing that out there. Not a Sonic fan.
No, I think everyone knows that. so like I've been doing this like 9 or 10 years. So like, I'm going to pick my favorites. It's not like I'm getting last place when I attend a tournament. Like I've won tournaments this year. Like I won a tournament like 5 minutes ago. So like, I don't got to freak out and do anything crazy. You know what I mean?
Hang tight, Gavin. Hang tight.
Yeah. No. Smash Ultimate Deluxe, please.
Please. Soon.
On another note, I'm not against a new game.
It is interesting, though. I mean, the start of this year, kind of on a similar note, this year has been, everyone was talking about it's the year of Game & Watch Steve Sonic, right? It's the year of that meta and all that stuff. And the results have been very sprinkled around. There have been many different major winners across many different continents and regions and all that stuff. It's been really, really cool to see. And I think this is a good time to switch. And we got to talk about Hurt, the big Hurt, man. What the hell? Like, I watch so many for Smash content, like where I'm at with Smash, you know, I still play here and there, but I digest so much content. I watch breakdown videos of brackets. I look at brackets myself and think who's going to do well. Obviously, I had Hurt doing well, but damn, dude, like winning the whole tournament and making Spargo look a little foolish. Did not have that on my list, bro. That shit was crazy. We were talking about it before we went live. That was been a while since we've seen Spargo look that way. It's been a minute, man. It takes a special player to do that.
Yeah. First comment on Hurt. Yo, that is an A button snake.
Yes, sir.
A button snake.
Yeah, double jump nair. Golly.
I needed Marcus to hear that. Like, that's an A button snake. There is two different kinds of snake in this world. And it has nothing to do with viability. They're both good. There's B button snakes and there's A button snake. Hurt is an A button snake.
I think that's so important because I think Snake, you need to be able to switch gears between being B and A for sure. In certain matchups and against certain player and character specifically, you can't be a B button Snake every single time because there are characters that just destroy that strategy. There's not many of them, but when it does happen, you better know the Kung Fu, man. You better know how to do a little QCQ. Close quarter combat. Hey, I did it. Got it. Nailed it.
Yep.
You guys. That's great. It's not great. I keep saying it's not great because right before we started, Paris texted me out of nowhere a Smash 4 clip from 2017 where I'm interviewing him. He won a tournament. He said, "Man, someone told me I need to shave my facial hair. And I say, it's not great. And then just move on with the interview. And he just texts me, goes, bro, the way you said it's not great is so funny. I was like, trying to change the subject, man. You called it out. It's right there. Maybe we'll post that clip. It's very funny. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
But basically, I think A Button Snake, it correlates with like reads and confidence, some sort of like, you know, like really having a grip on your opponent. And it showed a lot. Walking up and up tilting someone's spot dodge, doing something very unsafe by the numbers, like a landing back air, but them things landed every time. He was landing moves every time that I would die for if I was playing Snake. So like the double jump aerials where they're jumping into it, like,
so sick.
He knows what he's doing. That A button knows what it's doing, bro.
Hurt was ranked top 20. I think even then people were kind of questioning it because I think like above Mutase, you know what I'm saying? Like kind of crazy territory. So I think people question that a little bit. But I love when a player comes through and improves their rank or outshines people when people don't think they will. I think that Hurt did exactly that. I mean, won the tournament confidently to say the least. Didn't drop a set.
Didn't drop a set. And it definitely did feel confident to me. And something that's, I actually really like Snake. I think he's one of those characters where like he can, if you have an understanding of Smash on a pretty deep level, he's definitely a character you can appreciate. And he's such like a legacy character as well. But like obviously fighting him can be pretty torturous for a lot of people, especially me. Like I play Diddy Kong and that is, it's not fun. But I still love the character. He's so interesting to me and there's so many different play styles and there's so many different ways to win that are all pretty top tier viable. So like that always makes things interesting too. And he's so unique to himself despite being a legacy character. So I love Snake. There's been so many successful Snakes over the years. There's a bunch of successful Snakes right now. And they all play so differently. And I mean, when you play a character like that and a bunch of people are successful, it makes it so easy to like learn. Not easy, but it makes it so much fun to like learn new things. Like if someone's winning a major with your character, like that's some good news. Like you have a lot to learn. So it just reminds me of some of the other characters in Ultimate that just have a really dedicated player base, regardless of like viability. But yeah, I mean, he's incredible. And it's like Has was saying earlier, switching the gear is really important. And like that's something that you can say for a lot of characters, whether it's just general gameplay or A button and B button Snake. It could be a lot of things, but with Snake it's huge. Like he has such strong defense and offense, like damage output, the grenade, like the explosion B button setups or like the A buttons. So switching up is crazy. And Hurt is definitely great at that. Like, despite being an A button Snake, he still had a really smooth flow chart for the ledge trapping with the grenades. Like, it was very deliberate, very specific. And he's playing against characters that, in a weird way, require the A button. And and by weird way, I say, like, when I think of, like, Doramigi versus Hurt, you weirdly need to be A button despite not being able to close the gap that easily. So you really have to manage your shield health and all that stuff, which I think a lot of Snake players are good at because they're very grounded. They're always damaging their own shield. So Hurt was naturally really good at that, but he was very good at closing the gap, hitting super hard with the A button when he did get in. And with Spargo, it's kind of similar where a very general one of the styles isn't going to work either, but he really made the most of his normals this last weekend. It's like when I watched Doramigi versus Hurt, he took stocks, like the last stock with up tilt, I think every single game, 3-0. Just patient, just waiting it out. And like I don't know. His pressure was really ridiculous and not in like a Spargo or light way. It was mostly like a presence and confidence kind of way without like being actively like crazy, like mashing or like, you know, it's pressuring you. Like it was more like a mental thing, which is really interesting to see happen to a player like Spargo, because Spargo's the type of player that's so fast and like, I don't care about you type of way. Like I'm going to do this and you're not going to stop me. But Hurt manages his shield so well. He was so confident. He got Spargo to play really defensive in like a panic type of way. Spargo was trading a lot. Hurts' recoveries were amazing. Like, it was just like really clean gameplay. I wish I could talk about it a little bit more in depth, but I don't want to ramble too long. Like, I have a lot of thoughts on like Spargo's counter picks and maybe even if he should go Aegis next time. Corrin might not be able to play. But yeah, it's difficult. I think every top player has had a little bit of snake struggle at least some point throughout Ultimate. Like, every player has struggled. Like, a lot of the household names have a blemish in their record versus snake in some way or another. So he's a character that's here to stay, and he has been since day one for sure.
You know the craziest thing about his run to me? His hardest set was with Tori Guri.
Guri? Marcus, we were talking. We were so TG, bro, TG is the GOAT. Come on now.
I gotta give it up. Like, okay, so backstory, because Haz was about to say it. When Tori Guri beat Leo, I was tight. Like, I was so angry because very often does it happen where, like, someone who plays, like, a lower-tier character, they get the upset, they lose their next two sets.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. Yeah.
Bro, I'm just robbed of Leo versus Hurt. Like, and then Hurt went up 2-0 versus TG, and I was like, I can't believe this is happening. Then TG won a game, and I said, wait, hold on. Then he took another one. I said, ooh. Hold on, this is turning into a set, bro. That game.
Both his losses were game five.
Crazy.
Yoshidora as well.
That was a crazy game. That might have been my favorite set of the Spargo Yoshidora was really.
I actually think he was very prepared for his matches, and he wasn't playing the same he plays when I watch a lot of his highlights over the last year or so. Hmm. He actually, I would say it's a combination of improvement and actually deliberately playing the matchups he was playing. He wasn't just doing a normal Banjo flowchart in some of the situations. I think versus Leo was getting hit by the, this is what I do, can you stop it? But it was very interesting. Like, my Banjo is pretty good. It is not as good as Tori Guri's at all. But he was playing a lot of things so differently than I would have. And I just loved that. Like, It was so interesting. Like, think of how many, like, how far he went in the tournament without relying on any down throw confirms for a lot of those sets, if not every single set. Like, his flowchart was great. He had a specific ledge trap thing. He had so much shield damage with the grenades. He was so good in the Breagle Blaster stance. Usually when I'm in that stance, if I'm not doing KFC, the cancel, I don't want to be in that stance. But he wasn't doing it nearly as much as he was just moving with it really well. Like, rising ones, going back and forth, dropping through platforms, using all of his jumps. He was genuinely just pressuring with Breagle Blaster. Like, that's not tech. Like, that's not tech. Nope. Which is really, really cool. And I talk with a lot of great Banjo players, and they've really helped me a lot when it comes to understanding and playing him when I play him for fun. And they had so much confidence in Breagle Blaster that I really didn't. I genuinely thought it was like a pretty bad stance outside of the tech and the confirms that they had. But Tori Guri had more value in the stance than KFC. He would do KFC up close, and he was doing it, but it's a lot of the time it's like a win more thing rather than like, this is how I become a competitive character, which is so interesting. His wave bounces with the grenade are on point. He's always been super good at wave bouncing pretty much everything just because he's that guy.
Right.
But yeah, like, the way he won and the way he set up his win conditions were so outside of like a general Banjo gameplay. It wasn't down throw. He's this one's not too new for him, but he's so good at setting people on the platform and getting the side Bs. The Wonder Wings, because you have really no choice but to die once you get sent to the platform. But yeah, it was just beautiful gameplay. Like, a really great mix of just general basic fundamentals and the tech and being patient, not forcing any kills or anything. Like right there, even just these clips we're watching, like, it's very, very, like, small things that really add up. And he was, dude, like, the movement is so good.
Quick question. Have we explained KFC on the podcast before? Like, probably, the Banjo? Okay, why don't you explain it real quick? Because you said you dropped it in there, but let's catch everyone up.
So it's called Kazooie Fast Cancel, and it involves putting Kazooie away from the neutral B stance faster than normal, which means if you pop them up with the shot, you can get smash attacks, you can get Wonder Wing. So the potential is pretty ridiculous because it really helps because Banjo usually doesn't do ridiculous damage, and he also will have a hard time killing. But now he has just a straight up win condition. Like if you get hit by this, you lose at like mid percent. So I thought it was a really big deal for me to learn when I was playing, and it's really difficult, like frame perfect, but I started to get it. And the interesting thing about Toriguri is he can do it at a whim, but he's not like locked in trying to do it. Like he's just doing it if the opportunity presents itself, and he's just that good with Banjo. It's not even about the tech. That the tech is not why he was doing so well at Battle BC. It's like barely even relevant. He's just that comfortable with the character.
I was going to say, it kind of circles back to what you're saying about Sephiroth and playing your characters in tournaments and how it hardens them and how it makes you better with them. And like tech obviously is a piece of that puzzle, but like you said, or if you're trying to learn Banjo and you're trying to learn tech, you tunnel vision that shit initially because you're trying to learn it and you're trying to implement it and trying to see where it fits in. Whereas what you're saying with him is it naturally fits into his game flow rather than, oh, he's trying to fit this tech in where it applies. Yeah. Versus it just naturally working
out. It's more like a part of his moveset rather than like the main reason he needs the win condition or something like that. Which reminds me of like with Diddy, I have so many specific things. And when I do them, like I don't think twice about it, especially in tournament. It's just I've been practicing this for hours and years or whatever. Like if the opportunity presents itself, I'll take it, but I don't need it to win. And it's so nice to see that with Banjo because obviously he's lower on the tier list. And seeing him be able to win with that flexibility, and he doesn't need something specific to win. Like he just, it's kind of like Hurt. Like he just super solid neutral, like has a flow chart for his ledge trapping and all that stuff. And takes advantage of Banjo's weight and recovery and really patient and disadvantage. It's just beautiful gameplay. Like he'll take F tilts all day. Like he's patient with getting his damage and his kills. Like, he's so great at like sneaking in an up tilt to catch a ledge jump, which is something I've always kind of stole from him. Cause it has really little end lag. He'll throw out the up tilt, and if you jump into it, you die super early. But if you don't, he's repositioning. Down tilt's kind of like a advantage state move that he eventually throws in there once he starts breaking at your defense. It's just amazing. Doesn't dash attack too much, but when he does, it makes an impact. I was dash attacking a lot as like a reactionary whiff punish thing. So it was interesting to see someone not dash attack too much for damage or kills. Like, he was getting a lot of parries. Up smash was getting him a lot of kills, whether it was out of shield or parry. He was playing so well, and his positioning was so well with his neutral Bs and down Bs and his shield pressure that he was catching the double jumps with the big neutral airs. He was just so great at breaking down when someone's still playing grounded, when someone's going to be quick to burn a double jump into the neutral air. Like, he really wasn't forcing anything, and it just, dude, I can go on and on. Like, Banjo's a really sick character. Like, I really like the way the character flows when he's winning is really cool, and he's improved it so much to where it's he's just making Banjo a normal character. Like, he doesn't need something crazy to win. He doesn't need to break the boundaries of the game or anything like that. Like, he's just getting some solid reads. He's setting up his shield pressure, his positioning. Like, he's so comfortable. It's beautiful to watch. The occasional hard read with, like, popping base mage up with the egg, dashing forward, F smashing the air dodge. Like, he has a bit of everything. He'll play neutral all day, but if he has a read, he'll take it. If he has to KFC, he will. All that stuff. Like, I could go on forever. Like, the gameplay's amazing. He'll use all 5 Wonder Wings to recover if he has to, of course. Like, he doesn't need the platforms to always get a kill. Like, but yeah, I wish he didn't drop shield versus Yoshi's back air game 5 versus Yoshi, but he did. Sorry, yes. y'all probably hate me right now.
Tori Goat Mom, no, loved it. No, that was great. You couldn't say more. I mean, honestly, let's just pass the rock around here. Marcus, one of your goats, Dora Meegs,
speed
run legend. Min speedrunning characters? Golly. So ridiculous, man.
If you get hit, you die. Mm-hmm.
She is a fighting game character, I think, is what we need to consider.
Oh, true. Technically.
Some people were saying that.
Think about it.
They were like, do y'all consider her a fighting game character? Oh, I don't know. It's an interesting one.
Never thought about it.
Aside from killing people at zero, she plays very the opposite of the rest of the fighting game guys.
Yeah. There is one similarity in just being messed up.
I actually kind of expected him to do this well, especially once I saw some of the dropouts. I really wanted to see him versus like Sonics or see him versus Light, just to see how he approached those matchups, because I know that most North American Min-Mins really don't like fighting Fox, at least. I don't know how they feel about Sonic. I know Sonics thinks that Sonic does really well, and I could agree. I think there are some interesting ways that Sonic can approach some of Min-Min's blind spots and really take her pretty far off stage and make recovering pretty tough for her. And some of the ways he can abuse invincibility to go through some of the arm timing. So there's some things definitely that I think Sonic could do. But anyway, once I saw most of the people drop out, I was like, I could see Bro winning the event. Mostly because I haven't really seen Spargo fight a Min-Min in a really long time. The last time I saw him like practicing versus one was at the last summit. He was playing Proto and he was kind of struggling. So I think Dora is like easily the best movement that we've ever seen. I don't think it's close. And I've thought that for a long time. But he's still a kid in some ways, you know, he still has that little kid, like
everything you're saying. You don't have to explain to me. I know exactly what you mean.
I'm
probably going to say the same stuff.
He can take a lot of unnecessary risks. And he ends up getting reversaled a lot. And if he thinks he's right, he's just going to send it. Which has, like, you know, it has its merits. But
yeah,
especially on Min-Min, because if you are right on her, usually you'll just end up taking someone's stock. You only have to guess right about 2 or 3 times. Like, once you get that initial hit, you guess right 2 more times, you might just take their stock. So it was super cool to see how North America dealt with him, because I know he does really well in Japan. And I know when Zombo went to Japan, he actually played Dormigi, and he kind of got, I mean, the games were close. But he lost 3-0, if I recall correctly. And then I know Dora also beat Gluto, who was at Battle of BC. Well, was Gluto really a battle of BC? But anyway, but he also beat Gluto when Gluto was in Japan. So I felt pretty strongly about like his skill level. Like, he's beating Zomba, he's taking sets off Akola, he's taking, you know, he's beating a bunch of these players. But I thought his biggest hurdle was going to actually be Base Mage, which is funny because that is what a lot of people consider to be Min-Min's worst matchup, Jigglypuff, and Base Mage has a ton of experience in the matchup. Very well practiced. I rarely see him lose games in that matchup. So when I saw they had to play, I was like, bro, ain't no way. Like, this is Sonic's fault. Like, what is going on?
This Sonic's is the one killer,
right? So I loaded up. I was like, all right, man, this is about to be rough. And it was in the way that it normally is, but again, with Min-Min, as long as you're right, she kind of has like that Luigi-esque portion to her where the matchup may be a little rough, but the damage output is so ridiculous. The situation she can put you in is so ridiculous. The way she abuses your resources and like really makes you have to choose, like just make decisions on the fly based on like awful positioning can be really tough. And I think Dora's easily the best at abusing that. That's why you could see like that Riddle set, it was just a giga speed run on some of the games. But once he beat Base Mage, I was like, all right, we're in the clear. Min-Min versus Snake, we're chilling. And then the set started.
Hurt has never lost to Dormigi.
Hurt has never lost to him, right? I saw that. I was like, I mean, whatever. Like what's really the reasoning? Like, are they close sets? Like, what's going on? Does Hurt just have a handle on him? I saw the set start. Hurt pulled a grenade. Dormigi pressed Nair and hit the grenade and lost the stock. And I said, oh, no, this is this. I now see why he's never beaten him. This set is just, it's going to be rough. It's going to be a brutal set. And some of his hit.
It was pretty rough.
Yeah, some of the ways he was, like, he burned his double jump in some rough spots where he could lose his stock. He would try to control, like, space with the arms while a grenade was under his foot, which is something that is good on hurt because you need to have really good grenade placement and make things kind of awkward so Min-Min can't just control the flow of the game the entire time. But he would just jump into a grenade. Some of his moves were not the best timed. He was rolling a lot. He did a lot of landing directional air dodge, like try to mix up, but it still ended up in him losing his stock. So I think, like, when I was watching that set, I was like, I see. This is some of the things. And I think there's a lot of value in watching that specific set for Doramigi. I think if he really sits there, has someone go through it and, like, talk to him about, like, why these decisions or why your timings weren't the best in these situations, then I think it could lead to a lot of growth because he may, like, look at some situations a little bit differently instead, you know. But that was mostly what I expected. I already knew that he was exploding people on hit, so it wasn't, like, a surprise to me. I am glad that we're able to see a more aggressive Min-Min because I think people have this, like, idea that Min-Min is, like, she is a zoner, but I think she's a lot more flexible than people think. I think her Nair is just a really ridiculous button. She has down tilt. She has one of the best dash attacks in the game. So she can fight up close. She has a lot of cross-up potential. She has a lot of combo potential off of some of those moves. Like, at early percents, dash attack will pretty much always put you in a tech chase as long as you're not a floaty, so you can get a lot of damage off of that. Sometimes even stocks just off a raw dash attack. And if you're at the ledge, you can just put them in a 50-50 off of that. If, like, you dash attack them and they jump and you press jump ram-ram and they lose their jump, they could just lose their stock right there, right? So she has a lot of, like, kill potential off of some of her close combat moves. Even her jab at low percents, the gentleman will put you in a tech as well. So I think there was just a lot of things put on display that kind of, like, reshaped the way that people saw Min-Min. I'm sure most people still think she's, like, super lame, which is, like, whatever, right? But because she's corny. Like, you got to give that up. You know, you're getting blasted from across the stage. You get in. It kind of has that Pac-Man feel. Like, you finally get in. And then she just, like, hits you with, like,
an harder situation or something.
You know? Yeah. And then you just lose your stock and you're like, well, what the heck? Like, where am I supposed to be? Sometimes she has that feel to her. But it was just really cool to see him perform. And I'm glad because he's really young. He's like 15 or something, or 14, turning 15, something like that. Yeah. So there's a lot of room for growth and improvement, a lot of time. And I don't know. I'm excited to see where he goes from here for sure.
It is one thing, like, I love Battle of BC. It was one of my favorite tournaments we went to when we did the live podcast. Remember, that was really fun. It was me, Charles, and Gavin. It's been one of my favorite tournament series. I love Vancouver. It's a long flight, though, from the East Coast, is what I'll say, and it's not super cheap. But they bring out such good international talent, too. They were the first ones. Was it Yoshidora they flew? They were, like, the first international tournament to have Yoshidora, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah, well.
They do a great job bringing out international talent and, like, new international talent and keeping the bracket fresh. So I just want to say I really like the tournament series. I love Vancouver as a city. I probably would have never gone there in my life if it wasn't for that tournament. So I just want to say I really appreciate that. And I think, like, with that, there's so much to talk about with Battle of BC. Like, we haven't talked about any of the other competitors or big sets or anything. I obviously have to shout out Liam versus Riddles, a great set that ended not in the favor of the Belmont, big surprise, but it was still a hot set overall. I think that aside, we'll probably do some at some point. I don't know if we're going to record Patreon content right after this. We might do it later in the week just because Gavin's still getting back and we want Charles on the Patreon stuff. So we might record it later in the week and upload it. But if you sub to the Patreon now, Gavin will pick up PT again. So go ahead and bro looked over. See you in the corner. I was like, which one do people ask for the most? Like, PT's up
there. It's gotta be PT.
I see PT up there all the time.
PT's a big one. I wanted to say I appreciate Marx's analysis of Dormiki's play. I noticed some things like that too, and you can compare it to so many successful players over the years. his play style has a very specific flow and pacing, and it's very dominant. It's very oppressive. It's very confident. He's very willing to match everyone's play style or pacing, and just win in whatever way they choose to lose. He's down for them to lose that way. And Hurt was very incredible at dealing with that. A lot of Doromigi's decision making were at the same timings, whether it's disadvantage, neutral, or advantage. And it kind of reminds me of Spargo, and Hurt was also very successful against Spargo in the same way. A lot of Spargo's timings are very similar. He's very confident. He's very oppressive. But when you take that confidence away, not only do these young players keep playing at that same pacing they always play at, but they have a sense of fear with it. The spot dodges start happening. They start getting hit by the same thing over and over. And they kind of start brute forcing it because they're so confident in that flow chart that usually helps them win. Spargo has a lot more variance to it, of course. He has so much experience, and he's like a seasoned veteran as a teenager already. But it still applies to like a lot of players, young and old, of things they rely on and stuff like that. But yeah. Doromigi's play was really interesting from that perspective, because it was kind of like watching like Riddles, in the sense of, I'm going to play super fast. When I hit you, you're going to die, and we're going to move on to the next set. And even if there's small hiccups along the road in this set, I'm going to keep doing it. And it's usually going to be in Min/Doromigi's favor. So that's really interesting. Seeing like the constant up tilts on the air dodges and like all that type of stuff. And the interesting thing about players like this is it's an easy fix a lot of the time, which is why they're so terrifying. Like if the veterans have to beat them this way, then what are they going to do when they simply stop?
Yep.
It is right. Very, very scary. And it's why, you know, this is a bit of a messed up example, but think all the way back then to Mars versus Spargo at that CEO, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spargo, all you had to do there's a couple small things, and now you're Spargo. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's scary about a lot of these players, is there's going to be one day where they get a little bit more maturity and discipline in their gameplay, and beating them is going to be the hardest thing on the planet. And there's so many players like that have either gone through that process already, are still going through it, or will go through it. And Doromigi is one of the best examples based off of this Battle of BC experience, where it's such a crazy, intense mix of strengths and weaknesses as a player, like some of the craziest strengths, but some very glaring weaknesses. I think Min Min's to blame a little bit as well. But it's very interesting. Like, there's a lot of room for growth, like Marcus has been saying. And especially as a Min Min player himself, I really appreciate his analysis. And I noticed a lot of it in my own way as well.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just thinking about – it was kind of weird, because when I was watching, it kind of reminded me of Young Yu. And I know he's on
Min Min. I think that's why I'm saying what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, dude, I remember when Gavin used to do this. Like, oh,
yeah. Gosh. Like, you either lose immediately, or I lose in the same habit I always lose, or something.
Yeah, because I just, like, it just reminded me of, like, you versus DeBuzz. That's kind of what, like, Doromigi versus Hurt felt like.
Yeah.
Where it was just this one player who's like, oh, you think you're going to play at this pacing? Okay. Yeah,
but they don't change the pace.
And then he just cooks you over and over, and you're like, bro, like, I just got to do it better. Like, if I'm better at it, like, hey, I'm better than you, so I just got to do it better. And then let's lock in. And then you lose, and you're like,
yeah,
what the heck? So I don't know. Yeah. I think I just noticed that. But that's a good thing if reminding.
Easy fix, yep. And it means they will be so much more dangerous than they already are. In the blink of an eye. One day, Doromigi versus Hurt is going to be crazy dominant in Doromigi's favor.
Yep.
A flip will be switched. Maybe they'll eventually start to go back and forth after that. But stuff like that happens with these young and upcoming players with like crazy, like, just strengths in their gameplay.
Sorry, Gab, I didn't know you had more to say. I was trying to toss it to the Patreon, get us out of here. Gavin was gabbing today.
Yeah, I mean, Toriguri did fantastic. Yoshidora is like a very...
Goodness gracious, that dude's good.
Yeah,
it's very... Yoshidora is very different than everything else we talked about, where he's just... It's like we always say, like, he's just a businessman. He's just a business Yoshi.
He's like a businessman.
He plugs in, he wins. Game 5 last hit, 3-0, whatever.
He only lost to Spargo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's here to play, bro. And Spargo had almost got reverse 3-0'd, I think. So
it's getting there.
That set was good. That was a good set.
He has consistent defense. He has consistent tech chases. His damage output is obviously very high. He doesn't overextend on his edge guarding or his ledge trapping. He's just very seasoned veteran of the character, and he seems so calm and collected as a competitor as well, which I think is a big advantage to his playstyle and his character and everything. Like, it's hard to tell when it, in person, like in his face and his gameplay, it's very hard to ever see if he's flustered, which I think is very impressive. Riddle's obviously doing really well. I think he had some rough sets, but he continued to fight through it and got a solid top 8. Bass Mage and Toriguri got top 8 with Jigglypuff and Banjo. Yeah. So when I saw the top 8 bracket before top 8 started, like all the matches being decided, it was two low tiers fighting each other. Bass Mage and Toriguri. It was Ouch and Riddles, two Canadians fighting each other. It was Hurt and Doramigi, two Japanese players and winners. And then it was Spargo versus
Yoshidora.
Yoshidora, which were like two like kind of household season top 10 names. Like, it felt like everything was very sectioned off, and like they were all there for such different reasons.
Right on time,
brother.
But yeah,
hey, what's up?
What up?
Perfect timing. Charles is here, guys, just in time to start the episode.
I can't hear Haz.
Perfect.
I can't.
But it was a great weekend of Smash, and I'm gonna toss it.
I can actually only hear Pink. Let me read it.
Marcus, tell him to close the episode.
All right.
Charles just left. Charles is a treasure, dude. What the? How does he do this?
I was gonna ask Charles to throw it to like
to toss us out.
Yes, but I guess we'll just end it anyways.
Well, hold on, he's coming back.
Wait, Charles, take us out.
Yeah, I can hear you. What up?
All right, take us out. End the episode for us.
All right. Well, it was a great discussion. Battle of BC, Qui-Con was insane. It was a great discussion overall. I know we had a ton of fun. If you guys liked the content, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe on YouTube. And of course, we're going to get right into the bonus Patreon content where I will be joining everyone, I think, unless you guys pre-recorded it. But yeah, peace out.
See ya. Thanks for watching.